Here's our first reading for today. It's from Psalm 32. Happy are those whose transgressions is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Happy are those to whom God imputes no iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no deceit. While I kept silent, my body wasted away through my groaning all day long. For day and night your hand was heavy upon me. My strength was dried up as by the heat of the summer. Then I acknowledged my sin to you, and I did not hide my iniquity. I said, I will confess my transgressions to God, and you forgave the guilt of my sin. Therefore, let all who are faithful offer prayer to you. At a time of distress, the rush of mighty waters shall not reach them. You are a hiding place for me. You preserve me from trouble. You surround me with glad cries of deliverance. Amazing grace. But that's not even the reading we're going to talk about this morning. The reading this morning is from Luke, and we're going to talk about Zacchaeus. So Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through it. A man was there named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. He was trying to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not because he was short in stature. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore tree to see him because he was going to pass that way. When Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today. So he hurried down and was happy to welcome him. All who saw it began to grumble and said, he has gone to be the guest of one who is a sinner. Zacchaeus stood there and said to the Lord, look, half of my possessions, Lord, I will give to the poor. And if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I will pay back four times as much. Then Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house, because he too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek out and to save the lost. These readings came from the lectionary for this week. Do you guys know what the lectionary actually is? I know we've talked about it, and Bob said that's where the readings come from. So, really quick, every Sunday in the Christian calendar has a name. And for every Sunday in the lectionary, you will find up to four readings, sometimes three, but usually there's four. There's an Old Testament reading, there's usually a psalm, it's probably from one of the letters, and then there's the gospel reading. And in some churches, I know in the Catholic Church, they do a number of readings, and they basically read all four of them. But here, we tend to just pick maybe one reading, maybe two, but usually no more than two. But every week, there's usually four readings in the lectionary. And the lectionary is on a three-year cycle. Year A, year B, and year C. So we're about to start Advent, okay? December 1st is the first Sunday of Advent, just around the corner. So this year for Advent, that will also start a new year in the Christian calendar, in the church calendar. And there will be, for that day, four readings. And next year, on the first day of Advent, there will be four different readings. And then the following year, on the first day of Advent, there will be an additional 4 different readings. So in a 3-year cycle, you will touch just about every important part of the Bible, from the New Testament to the Old Testament. So that is where the readings that we use in the service come from, most of the time. Sometimes the readings are, let's say, too difficult, and maybe you might pick something else. But that is also why one Sunday you might be talking about an Old Testament reading, say Isaiah, and you might the following week be talking about a psalm, and then the following week you might be talking of something out of Luke or Mark. And that's why it jumps around, because there are 4 readings every Sunday. Now, what is a little confusing to me, and took a little while to figure out, is that the lectionary follows the church's calendar, the Christian calendar. So if you think of the life of Jesus, and let's make things really simple, I kind of think of it in 3 parts. There's the beginning when he's born and he's young and he's growing up. And then there's a time during his ministry. And then there's Holy Week and Easter and everything that goes along with that. So those 3 parts. So the church calendar begins, of course, with the birth of Jesus at Advent, just before the birth of Jesus. 4 weeks before Christmas, that's when the year starts. Then we move through Christmas and we move through Epiphany with the wise men. And 7 Sundays after Epiphany, so there's 7 Sundays in a row, where we tend to learn about Jesus when he was young and growing up. And then we come to Transfiguration Sunday, which is when Jesus' ministry actually starts. But the following Sunday in the Christian calendar, we begin Lent. So we just get to the point where Jesus starts his ministry, and we go right into Lent. And then Holy Week. And then Easter. Up to Pentecost. You know, Pentecost, when everything is red, the voice of God comes to dwell among us, the Advocate, who sent to journey with us through our lives and help us to remember all the lessons that Jesus taught along the way. So after Pentecost, we start the season that we've been in. And it started in June 16th of this year. It's called the season after Pentecost. And today is the 21st Sunday after Pentecost. And all that time, we have been studying about Jesus' ministry in the world. And we've been looking at all the stories and the lessons and the examples that he has set. And we are almost at the end. In a couple weeks, we start over with Advent. So the readings today were at the end of Jesus' ministry. If you were to turn the page in the Bible from what we read this morning, you would be at Palm Sunday. So the reading about Zacchaeus always comes this time of year, and it's convenient because it's around the same time as stewardship. And that is usually the thoughts that are attached to that reading. Zacchaeus stood there and said to the Lord, "Look, half of my possessions, Lord, I will give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I will pay back 4 times as much." And your pledge card is in your, right? A lot of times that's the way it's worked, just because that reading comes up this time of year at the same time. But, you know, there's a lot more going on here. We are in Jericho. We are 12 to 15 miles from Jerusalem. If you think of Palm Sunday, what comes to mind? A little help. What do you think of? The parade, right? All the people cheering, putting their clothes down on the road ahead of him. The mob of people that he's working his way through that are celebrating and screaming joyously. Those people are in the reading today. They're in Jericho too. But we don't make the connection because it's so far away. It's a number of months away before we come back to it. But we'll get back to those people in a minute. But Zacchaeus is a tax collector. He's probably one of the most hated people that could ever be in his community, right? Last week, Bob was talking about the tax collector that was in the temple and how horrible of a person they were. They would bring thugs in to collect extra taxes from people. So strike one, Zacchaeus, you're a tax collector. Strike two and three, you're a rich tax collector. Are we judging Zacchaeus fairly? That's what we know about him. What does Jesus see in him? Jesus finds him in a tree. He says, Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay with you today. Not I want to, or I'd like to. I must. Probably the person out of the whole community that would be least likely to be picked for Jesus to go spend the evening with. But Jesus was only looking for Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus was looking for Jesus. And in the crowd, he couldn't find him. Right? He's right there. He's coming right by. He's right next to me, but I can't see him. Have you ever felt like that? A couple weeks ago, a dialogue sermon. And the discussion moved to feelings of how in the world do I figure out what these readings are supposed to mean. Right, Don? Right? How do I find my way through the Bible? How do I figure out what something written so long ago means to me today? And there's many things that we could do. And there's many things that we do. And there have been one or two books written about the Bible, haven't there, that tell us, interpret things for us. We have some books down in the library. It's called the Anchor Bible. It's a Bible that's probably 40 or 45 volumes. It talks about everything about the Old Testament and the New Testament in simply 18 to 20,000 pages. We could read through that and probably have all the knowledge we could ever use. We could go to a library, and there's tons of books, and you could go, oh, my goodness, if you went to, like, Yale Divinity School, can you imagine all the books on all the shelves and all the pages and all the things that you could read all about what's written here in the Bible? And you could also find a church, listen to sermons. Christian church started as one little church, but now look at us. There's so many different Christian churches all over the world. Large denominations, small denominations. So many different variety of beliefs. And in addition to that, a number of them will tell you, if you worship any place else but at their church and don't follow their rules, heaven is not open for you. If you leave here with one thought, let it be this. Don't you ever let anyone, I don't care who they are, tell you that God does not have time for you. That you are unworthy. The only person that can ever do that to you is yourself. So as we struggle to find our way through these scripture readings, there is another way that we could look at things. We tend to take what is little and add description after description after description on top of it. But what if we looked in the other direction? What if we tried to find our way through the Bible by looking for the simple things? And how simple could we make things? How simple could we describe what the Bible means? And what if I told you could only have one word? Could you find that word? No help? Do we have a word? If you love, certainly. What else? Peace? What? A journey? What else? Faith? A couple weeks ago, Bob said the Bible is this. And what did he say? It's a book of justice, right? So if we took those little words and we added to them, let's say instead of one word, we allowed ourselves to have a whole sentence, 5 or 6 or 7 words. Could you do that? I have one. It's from my mom. She always said everything that you can find in the Bible about Christ means this: take care of each other. Just those simple words, take care of each other. And we could continue from there and end up with a paragraph or a book or a church or more books and more churches. But it all grows out of those simple little words: love, hope, the journey, justice. We are about to enter the season of Advent, right? And what do we do during Advent? What's the ritual that we all take part in? Lighting the candles of the Advent wreath. 4 candles that stand for hope, for faith, for joy, for peace. And then, of course, the Christ candle in the center. Everything that takes place from that moment forward for the rest of the year begins there. So if you ever feel lost trying to read the Bible and trying to find your way, just look for the simple little things, because they are more powerful than anything else you will find. That's what Zacchaeus did. He made that journey from his head to his heart. And instead of keeping all his riches, he told Jesus he would give half of them away. And besides that, he said, if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I'll make things right. When we come down to the end of Jesus' ministry here, Zacchaeus is the last person he interacts with. There is one more story, but I'll leave that for the next week. But at the end of this reading, Jesus says to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because he too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek out and save the lost." We're all lost. But I want to ask you, let's go back to that crowd for a minute. They're all yelling and screaming and cheering for Jesus walking through to Jerusalem. What are they screaming about? What are they happy about? Why are they cheering? Do you know? You ever think about that? Do you ever think, why are they so happy when in just a short while things will change dramatically. Are they cheering because of who Jesus is? Are they cheering because of what he's done? Or are they cheering because what they expect him to do? There's a huge difference there. They expect Jesus to be able to sit back and watch Jesus solve all their problems for them. And when that doesn't happen, well, you know what happens after that. Jesus has already given them the answers. It's those few simple words. All over the world today, if you were to take all the different religions and try to do the same thing and describe them, ask them, describe their religion in one word, I bet you'd find that everyone uses the same words. And when we go out of our comfort zones, of our churches and our synagogues and our meeting houses and our places of worship, and we take those simple little words with us out into the world, we don't just carry them around, but we allow them to guide who we are, what we think, and how we treat each other, we go from practicing a religion to living our faith. Amen.